Welcome to Bee's Table Talk, the podcast in which we have great conversations about business and our economy. My name is Bee Kyle, President and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber, and I'm so glad that you've joined us. I love these conversations. It's my opportunity to talk with leaders among us, doing great things within the community and within their organizations. And today, and actually this year, I'm delighted to invite our sponsor for this podcast, Wells Fargo. This organization has a legacy of extraordinary engagement in this region, and they're investing in their priorities through their work and their individual leaders. I'm honored they chose to support this enterprise as well. More to come on that. And my guest today is my friend Ling Becker, the Director of Workforce Solutions at Ramsey County. I first met Ling years ago when she was Executive Director of the Vadnais Heights Economic Development Corporation. And from the very first introduction, I was impressed both by Ling's energy and her unwavering devotion to business development. She's been with the county now for just over 4 years, and I'm very much looking forward to our conversation and introducing her to you. So Ling, welcome, and thanks for joining me.
Yeah, hi, Bee. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Good. So tell us about yourself. You know, you've got a fascinating background, including a season with the Met Council. So what was your journey to arrive at Ramsey County?
Yeah, well, I'll have to start at the very beginning, but then I'll just jump a little faster through some of the less interesting parts. But, you know, I want to start with my family being a first generation immigrant. My parents came here when I was 6 years old with just $500, two suitcases, and my sister being six months old.
Where'd you come from, Ling?
We were from Hong Kong. We immigrated from Hong Kong ahead of kind of the communist sort of transfer over to power back to China at the time. This was back in very, very late 70s. It was 79 when we came. But it was, and since that time, you know, my parents worked tremendously hard helping us assimilate, and they worked multiple jobs. And we really were kind of a success immigrant story in a lot of ways. And I think as I reflect back to why I kind of pivoted to my role today is, probably around 4 or 5 years ago, there was a lot of things going on around immigration in our community. And I had this epiphany when I was, shortly after I did LSP, actually, the leadership fall. And I had a conversation with Damon Shalom about kind of the purpose of your life and your meaning. And it just dawned on me that I had forgotten that I was a first generation immigrant. Honestly, I had kind of started doing my job and working on things. And I really wanted to get back to saying, you know, what do I want the last third of my career to maybe be? And it just wanted to be focused on giving back and giving it like opportunity to people. And so when the county had this opportunity to work on, you know, invest in the people of our community, many who are immigrants, it really seemed to align with my values. And it's really amazing to be able to do a job that not only you, love the subject matter, but it really aligns with your personal values in the work. So it really drives that, it kind of takes your energy up a notch. And that's why I think I do have so much passion for the work I get to do.
You know, isn't that exciting when I'm so impressed by Ramsey County. I've watched the significant investment in this approach, aligning our people with our values and really serving to the street, right? Mm-hmm. Big county, lots of big work, and not forgetting, let's connect to the people in the neighborhoods. And I'm very impressed. So it's neat that you found a place there.
Yeah, and certainly one of the big draws, as you mentioned, my background was in economic development, but it was kind of seeing, you know, the county structures. And, you know, structures really do matter because it focuses on who you get to interact with and where you have a position at tables and conversations, right? And so in our county, in our previous county manager had realigned the county into different service teams. And once we had this economic growth and community investment service team to be able to put workforce solutions and like the people part of our county's work in there instead of social services, where we think of residents as kind of like a leech on the system getting government services. It's a complete 180 of thinking about the potential of our people and really saying like they are the secret element that really makes our community like set apart from others. And if by investing in them, that is how we're going to get our economic growth. So I feel really fortunate to be able to kind of take that everywhere I go, but also see that in our county, like that's why we're able to get things done because the structures match the values, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm mm-hmm. sitting at that table next to our community economic development director, next to people who manage our properties, right? And mm-hmm. so it aligns mm-hmm. really well. Like if I was in human services, people would be like, why are you working with the chambers, right? It doesn't make as much sense philosophically. And instead we kind of really twisted that model to be much more focused on investing in the people in this community.
I love that. So when you think about your philosophy and how it aligns with your work, and I've observed how you have really plugged in our organization and others and big and small, really, in search of career opportunities and pathways for our St. Paul or Ramsey County wide residents. But of all of the work that you do, what would you say excites you most about your role at Ramsey County?
Oh, there's so much, you know, it's really hard to encapsulate that into an excitement point. But I think part of it is just seeing that, like kind of putting the county in the right role in the right places. And I think sometimes like we struggle when we're kind of in the wrong spot of a problem. And I think when we look at the different problems in our community and, you know, like higher, like workforce shortages being one, we're looking at, you know, public safety, especially with like the young people kind of, you know, being disconnected with school and careers and sort of, you know, getting involved in the criminal justice system, right? There's kind of a right place for the county workforce system to be in all those spaces. In some places, we're actually directly maybe being a more of a program provider, influencer, but other places we're like a convener, or we're the ones to sort of change the message about something or talk about you know, how we make investments differently. And I think finding those right places, I feel like I oftentimes get to see a puzzle and all the pieces are sort of in place, except they don't all fit. And one of the best roles in the county is to say, hey, wait a minute, let's look at it this way. Let's recut out the pieces. And oh, now this is where the county goes. And now all of a sudden the picture makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really kind of illustrative of kind of the work I get to do. Our county is so diverse. We are the most diverse county in the state. We're a very young county, and that's where all the diversity is. 50% of our county is actually under the age of 34. Now think about that as somebody who's running a chamber, helping support businesses as we think about the future. You know, where is it that we need to make those investments? And so leaning in with working with that whole continuum, right, of our schools, our community organizations, with the chambers, you know how much we've been thrilled with the Career Connect partnership. I mean, those are the types of things that we need to be doing more of as a community, is to say, here's a problem. We all have a different role. How do we all come together to solve it? Like, we can't just like do it alone. It wouldn't actually be as successful. So mm-hmm. that's actually like the funnest part. And I think, so with that said, I feel like rather than one project, you know, if that is the thing that excites me the most. I get to do that almost every day, which is really cool.
You know, and I got to tell you, more than any other organization we partner with, I've experienced that hands-on partnership with you, with Carrie Collins, with Ryan, you know, all the different teams at Ramsey County. There's a real sense of, you know, beyond the words, of partnership and aligning and working together. I really experienced that. And it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure working with you. So it's so fun to be able to talk to you about it today. So on that note, and we're talking statistics here. So just this past week, my blog, so as of the recording, it is March 21st, 2023. Those of you who know me know I like to nerd out on all things economics and numbers. So my blog this week was an update on the economy, on inflation, interest rates, et cetera. And one of the data points that really pulled me in and I thought would be relevant for our conversation today is this idea that we've got 5.1 million more jobs than unemployed workers nationally. And of course, that translates to Minnesota, particularly with our steadily below sustainable level of unemployment at 2.9%. So even more regional then, what are you seeing in the Ramsey County labor market today?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love that you're kind of geeking out on the labor market information and the data, because COVID-19, if it did nothing else, it made people who are interested in data and labor market a lot more elevated, because honestly, I think like traditionally people sort of talk about labor market information, but they don't invest in understanding it. And I think we've really seen a shift in that, because the labor market has been so unpredictable. You know, the economy has been so unpredictable. People are not, I guess, going back to like, you know, economics 101, there's not rational behaviors, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like people are actually mm-hmm. making decisions that aren't, you can't forecast. Like, what do you mean right. you're going to quit your job? What do you mean you don't want to work for more money, right? Like, what do you mean you're picking these other things? And so I yes. think it's fascinating. So not only why labor market's so important is that real-time labor market information is so critical, because like the trends just change like every month or every quarter, right? And so like the right. reflective time period of a year or something feels a little irrelevant. So back to your question, I mean, I think what we see in Ramsey County, or I'll talk statewide first of all, I mean, we know that actually if everybody in the state of Minnesota who wasn't working and could work would get into the economy is in some form, we would still be short 125 or 150,000 workers. So
right.
this was
right.
a problem even pre-pandemic. We had a labor shortage. This is true in Ramsey County. It's true across the state. I think what we're struggling with in Ramsey County is this idea that because we are the most diverse county, we have to focus more on like a little bit of that data deaggregation and look at the nuance of who's really still left out of the labor market. So I always try to tell people, when we talk about equity or inclusive economy, it's not a zero sum game. For people like who are working out in the business community and looking at, you know, and part of the chamber and looking at how they can lean into helping build a robust economy, it's a both and. We have to have an inclusive economy and there's room for everyone. If we make room for everyone, no one is actually getting pushed out. So I think that's a really important point. Because what I just said, like even if we fill all the jobs, we're still short, right? And so there's actually economic potential and growth for everybody if we can get more people into the economy. You know, we're still seeing, and this is year over year, significant increase in Black unemployment in Ramsey County still. So it's like, we're at about 7.3%, which is, you know, quite interesting when you're talking about, we're almost at near record low unemployment, you know, overall, right? Because mm-hmm. Ramsey County Blacks actually represent almost 11% of our population. We're seeing actually substantial trends of Hispanic folks being unemployed right now. Kind of interesting statistic too. I was surprised to see that. And this kind of leads me to talk about like the importance of data deaggregation. We had an interesting meeting yesterday actually with some of the culturally specific organizations, and they brought up some data points and like to really think about data in a little bit of a more focused way. Lots of Latinos in the community are actually working multiple part-time jobs. And sometimes we're not able to capture that data as fully. Some mm-hmm. of these statistics, people are actually working quite a bit, but they're piecing together multiple jobs for a variety of reasons, childcare, you know, family mm-hmm. challenges, right? So I think like looking at kind of the traditional labor market information, you always think, is there more of a story under the headline? And so I guess the one message I would say, you know, I love that you guys are digging into data too. We have a lot of it on our county, you know, Ramsey County Means Business page, but always kind of, you know, think thoughtfully as you look at data and say, what else is underneath that story? What more, what data should actually just open your eyes to asking another question, in my opinion, you know what I mean? But when it comes to like that whole labor force participation issue, you know, I think the gig economy is a huge factor. Folks are looking for more flexibility. You know, money is not the driver. If you're a business and you're listening to this, it's culture, it's buy-in from your employees, it's flexibility, right? And those bring really different challenges for employers, because for the first time we have a generation of workers, and you think about Ramsey County being younger, who actually are asking for the things that they want. They're not afraid to say what they want. Instead of kind of the, you know, of our generation, maybe be where you kind of just do what your company told the company line, right? Like, oh, should I ask for a salary increase? I don't know. Like, I don't want to like seem too greedy, right? You have all these conversations with yourself as you're advocating. Younger people have no qualms of like wanting purpose, wanting to feel humanized in the workplace. We've heard from young people, like actually diverse young people have told us they've been in workplaces where they don't even feel like they're humanized. They're going to walk away from that. You know, they don't, they don't feel that buy-in to like have to adopt a culture that they don't believe in. So it's something really, I think HR departments and, you know, company leaders have to be reflective of that, that there's a very different mindset. And it could bring fear, but I also think it brings a lot of potential. I mean, younger people have amazing creative genius that I don't think we've quite tapped into fully as a community. they were going to bring a whole slew of new ideas. And I found it fascinating. I was talking to one of the larger medical device companies, and they were talking about building more VR experiences, right? Like, there's all kinds of AI tech stuff happening in corporations. But do you actually want to build these experiences from a lens of completely like a 50-year-old, you know, white guy who's been in corporate America, or who's your next customer, right? I mean, so I just thought these kind of things are really, really just fascinating. Thinking as a corporation, like, what are you doing to understand your future, both your workplace and your customers? Mm-hmm. And I have one funny example. I was reading a story about even museums, and, you know, they realize their clientele is changing. And they were actually trying to think how they could have like a sneaker exhibit. And I was just thought that was so fascinating, because everybody knows their customers are changing. And so if you're not bringing those voices at the table to design your products, design your workplaces, design your culture, you're always going to probably be missing the mark a little bit, you know? So
I wrote that down, because this idea about tomorrow captivated. It mm-hmm. certainly was the theme of our whole annual yes. meeting, because my job every year is to spend time listening to you. What are you telling me? What are you seeing? And I have these conversations with just a whole host of folks, and I'm asking them, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? What's the pulse that you're sensing? What are you afraid of? You know, what are you responding to? Mm-hmm. And this idea about investing in tomorrow is everything, because so many of us my age and older are in this transition of realizing, oh my gosh, I'm yesterday. I don't know when it happened.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be true. Oh my gosh, it's true. So, I mean, my children remind me how hip and uncool and how irrelevant I am on a regular basis. But the point is, what are you doing to understand your future and adapt to it, as opposed mm-hmm. to fight it? Be what, you know, and so, mm-hmm. you know, so let's go back to data and tell me what answer for me. So you're talking about workforce participation. This gig economy is everything, right? So Minnesota's labor participation rate is 68.1%, which is below, I mean, we are a nation leading state in that data point, but our average pre-pandemic was just over 70%. And now some of it might be, as you say, folks are cobbling together multiple jobs with the focus on priorities as opposed to the paycheck, though they don't have to be mutually exclusive, of course. So what are you seeing in terms of the biggest challenges in that space as we capitalize on more participation?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, thinking about in Ramsey County and understanding our demographics, again, going back to we're a younger, more diverse county, we have a whole, you have to think about the COVID impact. And I think a lot of people want to think like COVID's over, and I do too. We want to move on. And for many people, they've been able to sort of pick up and move on. For our community, there's actually a very scientific evidence-based concept called scarring. When people of color, sometimes women even, young people who experience traumatic sort of jolts, right, toward learning or life experiences, it sets them back for multiple years, even maybe a decade when it comes to wages. And we've done a little bit of studying on this and recognizing that it was our 16 to 19 year olds, 19 to 24 year olds that experienced significant unemployment impacts. And so you might think, what is the big deal? You know, it was a hospitality kind of like layoff season. Somebody was a waiter, they lost their job. Well, the following summer, you know, there was all kinds of opening again, and there were tons of jobs. What is the problem with that, Ling, right? Like seems like people should just be able to bounce back. But for a young person who's maybe on the margins, who's contributing to their family's income, that jolt might have led them to like more housing instability. It could have led them to some mental health issues, right? Maybe they had they were more likely, if they're a person of color, to have maybe a significant breadwinner in their family pass away due to the pandemic. So we don't know all these other kind of like elements that kind of like scar somebody and actually prevent them from re-engaging. Then we have the whole school disruption piece. The county's actually tripled down on this whole idea of providing earn and learn opportunities for young people 18 to 24. And the reason mm-hmm. we're doing that is they were the ones that lost the most jobs during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Two, they were the less educated. There was the least educated, like without a high school diploma or college degree, the younger, and also our Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Those are the three multipliers. But the key would be you never had that career exploration. You didn't, you had one less year that a teacher tapped you on a shoulder and said, hey, I think you'd be good at blah, 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 right? Or I mean, like, you're, like all those things that make a difference, you can't, don't get to relive junior year or senior year again as a high school student. And now you are disconnected from the educational system and you are 21, you know, in our community, in our economy. And what is your next path? You and we already have that on top of a community that's very diverse, lots of refugees, immigrants, people who maybe don't have a lot of social capital. And you think about, how do you learn about careers? How do you learn about a next step? How many, you know, folks, you know, when you talk about kind of privilege per se, it, you know, people don't think about the little nuances of privilege. It can be just someone who knows, if your dad knows a friend and can get you an internship, or can, you know, or maybe you just knew an uncle that did a certain type of job. So it was even the lexicon was in your brain. I mean, it can be very small. Recently, we've been doing a lot of work around driver's licenses. So I kind of opened up a Pandora's box about car ownership. And then all of a sudden I was sitting there going, oh my gosh, even car ownership is a generational wealth building. Because how many people, their first car was their parents' junk car that they got to drive, right? So you think about these, like so many things that build a person's capacity to sort of move on an adult and be able to hold a job and have the basics you need to sort of, you know, connect to what it is you could possibly do with your gifts and skills. And so many young people don't have that. And that like layer of like when that happened now is pushed further and further. We try to do most of that during school years. So we can capture that, you know, either through high school or post-secondary, you know, even community college or early, you know, four-year degree. But so many kids got that taken away during the pandemic. Gosh. And these are your workers. These are the folks that didn't have somebody, you know, they didn't do the internship. They didn't do the Right Track experience. You know, it was different. The Right Track still operated, but they had to pivot just like everybody else, like our work experiences. And they learned how to do some career development via Zoom, which was a good pivot. But it wasn't the same as a kid who got to show up at, like you guys have had interns, where they got to go to meetings and answer, you know, work with teams and sit in meetings, right? I mean, so and whether or not anyone ends up saying, I want to be the president of a chamber, they could actually decide, hey, I want to work with my hands. I want to work more in an office. I want to make sure I have a lot of meetings. I hate meetings, right? Like kids need to, people need to do all of that. And so I think that is the one part of the statistics that we forget about, is we have a whole slew of young people who are actually part of our workforce, but didn't really get an orientation into how to be in the workforce at all. And you therefore know, they're kind of a limbo land.
That's such a great segue to talk about this career day idea that we've been piloting. This idea about when kids are still in school, expanding their idea about what's possible, right? This idea about, you know, career pathways, you know, and it being introduced to, because even if you don't have any strategic guidance at home, like I didn't have, if, and even if you simply meet a nice person who does a career that, you know, whatever, but it's a nice person, you're inclined to follow the lead of a nice person, even when you don't know big picture where you want to see yourself, you create those connections that count, for lack of a better phrase, to connect kids to opportunity and to people and to examples of what their own future might look like and give them a picture of it, right? So here's my question for you then, with all this in mind. So with all that you see and all that we've talked about already, what would you say are the biggest opportunities in Ramsey County to meet the workforce challenges that we're talking about?
Well, I think one of the things we've already highlighted is we have a very strong ecosystem of people who care, right? We like that relationship with the chamber and the work that you do to connect us with other folks and the work that we do to try to work with our school districts and other, you know, other, the city, you know, other groups. I mean, the relationships are here. I mean, in this is a smaller, I mean, when you think about in the whole scheme of metropolitan communities, we actually, I think about the nimbleness nature of the right size sort of like ecosystem. We actually have a perfect size ecosystem, B. You know, I know when we can see you smiling, but it's true. We actually have, that is one of our biggest opportunities. We can pick up a phone and we know all the people up and down the street per se in a really good way. And so we have most of the answers to that puzzle, that I was kind of describing, right? It's just kind of like, how do we redraw the pieces and what pieces is missing? But we actually do have a lot of the components, and we have a lot of passionate people and leaders leading these organizations that actually are aligned. So that's a huge asset. I think for us, you know, the other opportunity is embracing that this economic workforce inclusion is our economic competitiveness. And I hear that over and over again through the chamber. Your annual meeting was a message of that. So I clearly believe that your board and other businesses believe that. Once people know it's not a zero-sum game, everyone wins, that's a big first step, because there's a lot of communities that aren't there yet. It's more exclusionary, right? We still want to keep the old boys club. Nope, you know, tomorrow doesn't look like yesterday. And we actually, when people start talking about the pandemic and the response, nope, we don't want to go back to what it was. We don't want to rebuild. We actually want to reimagine, right? We really want a different economy than we have than today. And so, you know, this is kind of a nice way for me to segue about the opportunity that I've been meaning to talk to you about. And we haven't had a lot of conversations. I'll be interested to hear your thoughts. I just reread a study that most recently that young people in high schools have a very strong interest in entrepreneurship, almost to the point of like 60-70% of them want to open a small business. I come from a generation, and I think we're probably similar, that when you think about small business, you start thinking, okay, the failure rate, like, is whatever, right? Whatever number somebody has thrown in your brain. Right. And we think brick and mortar and inventory, and you can't do it. And like, what would be the point of investing in all these young people in entrepreneurship? I think we have to throw that idea completely out the door, because that is not entrepreneurship today. You can do it pretty much on a computer in a lot of different ways, seeding some things. I mean, certainly some businesses you're going to need more startup capital, but there's actually some seeds and fruit possible of entrepreneurs among a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. And I guess then the other challenge, and I've had a few conversations with some large entrepreneurs or business owners, even in St. Paul and Ramsey County, about this concept of entrepreneurship being a workforce development strategy, and they love it. They were like, those are the people we would want to work for us. So we need to let go of like the goal that when somebody starts a business as a young person or gets oriented, like JA, for example, they're doing great work, you know, around young people and entrepreneurship. We should be leaning into more things like that, because honestly, they're learning the workforce skills of tomorrow. It's just like learning about healthcare or manufacturing. Learning entrepreneurship is a workforce development strategy. And I think the chamber is really positioned well to sort of work with us, to talk, kind of ideate kind of what that could look like. Because honestly, I'm not worried about somebody actually, the young people actually getting a business up and going or not. I think the actual journey is of high value. I mean, of course I want them to be successful, but I think we've underestimated what the value is for our community of the journey. And there's all kinds of stuff we're not going to be able to see until we invest that way. So,
and I think that, I mean, the side hustle is the order of the day. I have employees who work with me full time who have side hustles. So entrepreneurship doesn't need to be mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
At our career day, we actually brought in a couple tables, and we simply invited entrepreneurial entities, you know, Beta, Lunar Startups was a really big thing, all about, you know, our St. Paul partnership around full stack, this leaning in on future thinking around entrepreneurships and startups and tech, right?
Yeah.
That we need to really create that platform, because kids want to know that how they think there's room for that, and we simply need to make room. So I completely agree. And also it's, this has been a talking to myself. Okay. I know my employees have side hustles. Is that a problem? What do I think? Because in my generation, that would have been disloyal or distracting or otherwise disabling to the organization. Yeah. If my team members doing their job and they're impassioned, they're empowered, they're excited, and some of that happens to rub off in my organization, all right, woohoo, you know, I think you're better for it.
Yeah. Back to your question, it's really like this opportunity of seeing, leaning into what people are saying they are interested and want, right? Yeah. Like when we went to the East Side Employment Exchange, one of the things I loved is we did a project where we tried to understand what types of jobs those people wanted to do. Like, I mean, I think like thinking about an economic development strategy that's not only focused on what businesses want, but what the residents and the people who have to work in these organizations are looking for, it needs to be a good match. And I think that's kind of a different way of kind of thinking about our work. So whether it's entrepreneurship or whether it's more community engagement on like a grassroots level as the city's planning department or the county sort of, you know, or even the port trying to open new business centers, like kind of having an understanding of what that community you're landing in is really mm-hmm. important, what they value in terms of mm-hmm. like where they want to work. I mean, where people value their time. They don't want to drive. I mean, do you want to get in a car for an hour to drive to YZ to go to work? I don't think I do. You know what I mean? If you live mm-hmm. over here in the East Side. So I do think there's some place-based sort of strategies around making sure we have these vibrant communities. And really one of the last things I want to make sure we talked about today is this kind of moving to more hybrid and digital work and how we need to kind of continue to have conversations as a community about the impacts of that. Mm-hmm. And while there's some like two sides of a coin, there's a lot of good. There's a lot of sort of unintended or maybe, I guess that's the best word, unintended consequences of, you know, kind of losing a little bit of the vibrancy that being around people and having connectiveness and seeing downtown's more vibrant. You know, those are all like some of the trade-offs, and we're going to have some real conversations as a community of, is that the kind of community we want, you know, mm-hmm. and will this model stick, or is it kind of a passing thing? I'm not really sure. I mean, I say that in all honesty, like I love that there is some flexibility, but I also have lots of employees who are like, gosh, I really like coming in. I love going to the Skyway and getting some takeout or whatever, right? Like there's things that are kind of missing. And then I worry about like large corporations or even medium sized. I think about some of our suburbs even, you know, and downtowns, reducing their footprint, and people actually who work for your company that don't have any investment living in this proximity, that's kind of sad to me. And I don't know what I really mean by that, well, except that something feels like it would be lost.
Well, but there's a yin and a yang to everything.
Yeah.
Right? So
absolutely.
More of a hybrid environment allows Ely to have more people working
exactly
without
exactly.
living in Ely. And that also means that some of our Ramsey County employees are going to work for a company in California. So the yin and the yang. Yeah. And I will tell you, I also see that there's a pendulum swing. And right now it's swinging more towards quality of life. Post-World War II and through these last 40 years, it really was about complying and engaging. And there's been some, again, as you had said, unintended consequences in terms of our children or our own experience of quality of life. And so if our kids are swinging towards the quality of life space and recognizing their own trade-offs relative to climbing the corporate ladder or whatever it is, I mean, there are other unintended consequences in the commercial real estate market right now. We're seeing turbulence in terms of how businesses are engaging in real estate in our cities. So really bigger conversation that for another day. But
absolutely.
But
there's a workforce impact, though, right?
Because the
people are the ones kind of driving. Like, I don't know, it'd be interesting to know, like, is it really the employers and businesses that are going to drive those trends, or is it the employees, right, that drive those trends because of their demands?
Well, so on that note, for employers listening today, how can they engage with Ramsey County Workforce Solutions? I'm a small business, a medium-sized business. I have these questions. I'm struggling through a variety of challenges. How do I find you, and what can you do with me and for me?
Yeah, we can do lots of different things. You know, we do provide all the employer services for the county when it comes to like job fairs or connection events. So we do have a an email address called employerservices@ramseycounty.us. You can just go ahead and, you know, email us if you need something. We also have the ability to run some labor market information for you if you're interested. If you really are sort of focused on building a more inclusive workforce, we certainly will sit down and kind of help you develop an inclusive workforce plan. And we also provide, you know, some cohort training for people who actually are saying, you know, we really want to dig in and we want to actually bust apart some of these policies and procedures and things like that. So we anticipate having more of those kind of opportunities going forward. Also, you can check RamseyCountyMeansBusiness.com where we have our job board. We have lots of labor market information, like all our employer news and things like that, that are out there. So yeah, lots of ways to get involved. But certainly if you just are trying to find job seekers, we do have a lot of tools for you, whether it's job fairs, job boards, job clubs you can attend, you know, employer of the day at one of the county sites, you know, all, like ways to get in front of residents to showcase your opportunities.
All right. So let me say that again. If you want to reach out to the county, it's employerservices at ramseycounty.us.
Yep.
And then if you want to go to their website, the Chamber and others post their job. We promote their jobs posting platform as well as all of the services. Ramsey County means business.com. And they were tremendously helpful during COVID too, in terms of that really, really a strong website that they use, and the county really invests in it on behalf of business. So it's a good one. And then a final question for you, because I see we're running out of time, which is, I love hearing from my guests about your thinking on leadership. So to you, what would you say are some character traits that define a good leader?
Wow, that's amazing. I love that question, especially not in a job interview, Bea. I think for me, the most important thing is to be authentic. I mean, to me, I want to make sure that whether it's a resident that happens to, run into me in one of our county service centers, or I'm talking to you at a chamber event and you introduce me to, the CEO of 3M, you're going to get what you get. And I think that's why it was so important to me to be working in a role that allows me to be who I am every day. Like, I don't have to be someone else. And it's really great. I think that's how you bring really strong energy to a job. Like, you get up every day and everyone has a little part of their job. They're like, oh, I got to do this paperwork or this thing. But I can honestly say, I love 98% of my job. There's probably a very small sliver of stuff that I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't have to do that today. But I really do enjoy it. I mean, I probably struggle more with saying yes than no to most things because I love it so much. So I do think it's really important to be that kind of leader where everyone's talking the same thing about you. I mean, I think that's really, really important. They don't feel like somehow somebody, because of their status, privilege, their power, their role, they got a different person than somebody else, So I do think that's probably, for me, top notch. I mean, there's a lot of other things, to being a leader, whether it's, being compassionate, having, strong vision, things like that. But I do think it's really, really important that, you are who you are. There's you're comfortable in your own skin.
I will tell you, we had a board meeting this morning, and what I thought was one more example of the times they are changing is the bringing the human element to business. People are feeling like they have more permission to bring that authentic human element into their work. There were three or four board members who were wrangling kids. They actually said, I'm not on screen because we did a hybrid meeting. I'm not on screen. I'm wrangling kids. And they just, confessed it. I love the fact that we know it's like in the Black community. I heard some really powerful Black women talk about in the 60s. And one of them said, the streets were burning and we were going to work. Right. This idea about absolute disconnect from reality.
Yeah.
And how hard that is on our human psyche, right, to be disconnected. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about authentic, and then we see leaders today who are kind of owning that human experience, I am just completely on board with that because, it's hard enough to be human and then separate from your life to go to work. And isn't it nice to be able to bring it along so that, as you say, you get to be the same person wherever you are. So, oh my gosh. All right. Well, we run out of time, but oh my gosh, we could keep talking. Thank you so much. This was so awesome.
It was really fun. Thanks for inviting me.
All that you're doing to shape the future of business and the conversations around it. I mean, really valuable. So thank you so much.
Yeah. And thank you for the partnership of the Chamber. We really could not do it without you. I would just say throughout the pandemic, I just kept saying, we got to keep our chambers, thriving because you are, now that we kind of see a little light at the end of the tunnel, we need you to be, and you are, have all the right people in the bus to be able to step on the gas and go. I mean, that was really important. And seeing your annual meeting made me realize, oh, we have it. You know what I mean? It's there. So it was great. So
I appreciate that. Well, thank you. And thank all of you for joining us for Bea's Table Talk. And thank you most sincerely to Wells Fargo, our sponsor. We do have more conversations in the weeks and months ahead, speaking to more business leaders in the greater MSP region and hearing from them on how their organizations are investing in tomorrow. So thanks to all, and we will see you in the trenches.
Thanks, Bea.